all of us have learned life lessons that have served us well. More often than not, these lessons have not come in a book or a classroom, but through another person or an experience, even a failure. One such learning for me occurred on the Chesapeake Bay as I was at the helm of a 25-foot yacht. 24 hours before, I received a phone call from Garrett Freeland, who was a new member in my Baltimore City parish, who had retired, sold his home, and moved with his wife to the home of her mother, and there he bought a yacht for his retirement. I can still remember Garrett's Midwestern voice telling me to alter our course by 3 degrees, or else we would be shipwrecked upon the breakers at the foot of the Chesapeake Bay Bridge. About a half hour later, we sailed under the bridge's main span. That day, I learned that a little adjustment in the present could mean a great deal more in the future. The Philadelphian-born vaudevillian and comic actor W.C. Fields led an unrestrained showbiz life, displaying a fondness for alcohol and mistresses. He was not known as a religious man, but when he was diagnosed by his doctor with a life-threatening illness, he began to read the Bible. When a visiting friend found Fields sitting in the garden with a Bible in hand, he asked him why he had lately taken up reading it. Fields humorously and honestly replied, "I am looking for loopholes." Like W.C. Fields, many people think the Bible's main purpose was getting people right with God, preparing them for heaven and saving their eternal souls. It has something to do with that, but not everything. The scriptures were also concerned with living on this earth faithfully, lovingly, and generously. Didn't Jesus teach us to pray, "On earth as it is in heaven"? There is a distinctive strain of writing in the Bible that was more or less specializes in dealing with human experience just as it is. Wisdom is the biblical term for this "on earth as it is in heaven" living. Even though he did not write them all, King Solomon the Wise's name has been associated with the wisdom books of the Hebrew scriptures or Bible. The book of Ecclesiastes, Job, Proverbs, Song of Songs, Lamentations, and Esther have served me as a guide to enable me to better understand my pastoral roles and tasks these past 46 years. It wasn't in my Lutheran seminary Old Testament classes, but in a voluntary Thursday afternoon Bible study for pastors taught by a Presbyterian pastor who would go on to international fame with his contemporary translation of the Bible, The Message. Eugene Peterson, who died last November at the age of 85, taught a group of us on a weekly basis, and Gene would sit there or stand there with the Hebrew Bible in one hand and the Greek Bible in the other hand and deliver a translation that was exciting and meaningful to our group. He taught us the Megillah. I never knew what the Megillah was before. And it's the five scrolls in the Hebrew Bible that was read at festivals and fasts. The Song of Songs, also known as the Song of Solomon, was read at Passover. Ruth at Pentecost. Lamentations on the ninth of Av. Ecclesiastes at Tabernacle. And Esther at Purim. Each of these Megillah, set by Judaism in an act of worship, highlights an aspect of pastoral work which is still important today. Learning how to love and pray as God's beloved. The Song of Songs. Developing and forming an identity as a person of faith within the context of God's story. And that's Ruth. Dealing with suffering and loss and mourning. Lamentations. Reminding people you cannot make a religion without God and achieve wholeness without faith. That is Ecclesiastes. And then becoming a community of faith and blessing amidst a hostile environment. And that is Esther. Last week I had expected to be present for the baptisms of Wyatt and Cooper and begin this sermon series on the book of Ecclesiastes. Well, who better than a person named Koheleth to speak for the preacher? The Hebrew name or title Koheleth means literally preacher or teacher or assembler. Koheleth's pastoral evaluation of the state of religion in his time is summed up in one Hebrew word, hevel. Hevel. Say it, hevel. It connotes what is visible or recognizable, but at the same time, insubstantial, momentary, profitless. Koheleth uses this word 40 times through his Ecclesiastes scroll, and both of the beginning and the ending, he doubles it for dramatic usage. It means vanity, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. That is the obstacle Koheleth seeks to drive out of Israel, to sweep clean with his theological broom. So who was this Koheleth, and when did he write? The general period for which he is known to have lived is the late Persian and early Greek period, between 350 and 250 BC, coinciding with the conquest of Alexander the Great, who took over the Middle East and introduced Greek culture in it. It is one of the least known periods in Israel's history. Of course, nothing occurs or is written in a vacuum. Judging from the contents of the 12 chapters of Ecclesiastes, we can surmise that the religious situation that fits what is known as Koheleth's century is a time not much unlike ours. A peacetime culture of moderate prosperity and changing sexual mores in which religion doesn't seem that all important. Under such conditions, two things developed among the Jewish people. Deterioration of a healthy biblical faith and neurotic beliefs in an approaching doomsday. Ecclesiastes was among the last books of the Old Testament to be written. Given the way things were going in Judaism at the time, one can appreciate a voice like Koheleth, who refuses to cater to the demands for either a warmed-over message or half-baked predictions of gloom, for which there was and continues to be a ready audience and market. It is no wonder that the Jews, who wanted to preserve the faith and pass it on to future generations, assigned Ecclesiastes to be read at the Feast of Tabernacles. The theme of tabernacle worship was God's bounty and blessing. It combined the seasonal festivities of the harvest festival, Bounty, with the historical memories of the miraculous preservation of the Jews in the wilderness, blessing. There was a time of plenty and rejoicing. The natural goodness of creation, the grain harvest, and the supernatural goodness of God, the water, the manna, and the quail in the wilderness, represented the preached truth that God gives abundant life to his people, as in the familiar 23rd Psalm, "My cup runneth over." There are themes that continue to be repeated in our Christian worship as we offer our gifts and praise to God for his goodness and grace. Most significantly, Ecclesiastes was an assigned reading for the Feast of Tabernacles. The most negative of scrolls was required reading for the most positive of feasts. The joining together of Ecclesiastes and Tabernacles is plainly pastoral. For as long as people are in touch with God in worship and in their hearts and memories, they will put their faith and trust in God. And that is the message of Ecclesiastes. Koheleth serves this pastoral function by challenging naive optimism, which assumes that being on God's side carries with it the comfortable wisdom that solves all difficulties, and by cautioning the expectation of miraculous rescues. Koheleth, his detached honesty, is a pastoral statement to what God does and will do, but not what we expect of God or what we want God to do for us. There is no message he has to deliver. All that is left to him for him to do is warn against illusions, vanities. I think of the preacher in terms of parents who call their children to dinner. The children come in and play with dirty hands and are instructed, "Go wash up, then you can sit down at the table when you are clean." We are called to do the same thing every Sunday morning. Every Sunday we are to sit or kneel down for Sunday dinner, the Lord's Supper. As a preacher who is a pastor, I feel responsible every Sunday to provide a supernaturally nourished and well-served meal. Whether or not I succeed or not does not matter, for the sacrament of the altar always feeds the flock fully. Some Sundays, while the preacher may do his work, we still may feel empty. But it is an emptiness that will be filled with the Spirit of God and Christ's meal. Beloved people of God, on a perfect day for sailing 4 decades ago, a wise man offered me sage advice, and I took it. One thing I have learned over the years is we worship a God who does things for us that we cannot do for ourselves. God is not the sum total of what humanity is in the process of learning about itself, the world around us, or the universe itself. God, as the 20th century Swiss preacher and theologian Karl Barth defined, is wholly other. The gospel message says, we do not live in a mechanistic world ruled by necessity. We don't live in a random world ruled by chance. We live in a world ruled by the God of Exodus and Easter. We come to God not to get our way, but to get His. Not to acquire a means of impressing our friends, but telling Him to make an eternal impression upon us. When all is said and done, we will truly realize that I began to realize that day in July in the Chesapeake Bay, that life is a journey, and it doesn't matter where you begin, but how you finish. Amen.